This conference is being recorded.
All right, welcome everyone. If you'd like to follow along with our agenda, we're going to go through it very quickly. You can go to globalskywatch.com/go, and take a look at our agenda at the bottom part of the page. Here we go. First thing I want to cover here is introduce myself. If you're new to this call, my name is Russ Tanner. I'm the founder of Global Skywatch. I suffer from chemtrails. I've watched the sky all my life, and I can smell and taste chemtrails. I'm among a minority of people who have a very sensitive sense of taste and smell. So for me, there's no question about it. There's no doubt about it. And so I'm very involved in this because I and many other people that I know and have come to know suffer greatly from it. The way that this conference works is we're going to cover our agenda items very quickly, and then we're going to talk with Clifford Carnicom from the Carnicom Institute, the founder, and we're going to learn all about what he is doing and what he has learned to help us get better, and we'll do that shortly. What I want to introduce everyone to is about how we communicate. We have a Facebook group. If you're not already a member, we encourage you to join it. It's called Chemtrails Global Skywatch. Just do a search for groups on Facebook, and hopefully you can find it. There's also a link on the Global Skywatch website if you go to the homepage. If you want to be notified about events by email, you can join our Wigio group by clicking the link in the agenda, or you can go to wiggio.com, and that won't work if you go directly there because you won't know the group to join. If you go to the Global Skywatch website, go to the phone meeting page, and we'll have a link there for you. If during this call, if during the next couple minutes before Clifford and I start talking, you have any problem, let's run a real quick experiment here since we're using this new phone system for the second time and we're starting to use the features. If some of you would do me a quick favor and press *6 on your phone, I want to make sure that this is working properly.
Q&A session started.
Go ahead and press *6 on your phones.
Q&A session is over.
Great. Thank you very much. Let's finish this agenda and get to Clifford. All right. The little poll. What I would like to do is experiment by conducting a really quick poll. How many people? Let me get ourselves set up here real quick.
Q&A session started.
How many people on this phone call right now have just learned about chemtrails or geoengineering in the past year? If you have, press *6 on your phone, and that'll effectively let me know that you're raising your hand to indicate that you have just learned about chemtrails in the last year. And while you're doing that, I will talk, and I'll give the results of that in just a minute. Want to go over our projects real quick. The NGN geoengineering project, there's a link to it on our agenda. And on the home page, we have a link to our current projects. The NGO engineering project is starting by putting signs in your front yard, and people will be exposed to those signs. And on that sign, there's a website called ngoengineering.com. And we're going to eventually have bumper stickers and thumb drives and business cards and all kinds of things so that this website will be exposed in multiple countries around the world. I hope that this will become a huge success. We already have over 25 people the first week who are participating, and I've already got some other people who have already responded in the last few hours. So things are moving along very well with the NGO engineering project. Please consider becoming involved in that. Also have a couple inquiries from another country, too, from two other countries. The Blog Blitz Project, if you need help or you want to have a blog, and you want as many blogs out there that have information about geoengineering and chemtrails as possible, we would like to flood the Internet with this information so that people can become aware of this problem. There's still the majority of the public doesn't know about it, hasn't heard about it, and there's a certain percentage of the public that when they hear about it, they are open to it. If we could capture those people and get them involved, we could have success in putting an end to this nightmare. The Business Model Project, if you're interested in having a business with a website selling herbal supplements, my business is willing to set you up with virtually no cost as long as you will pledge a percentage of your income to the organization that's being founded by Michael Murphy or a similar organization that is directly supporting chemtrails. We need, this takes money, they need to fly places, they need to produce films, and we want to help them grow a base of people who are going to provide income for them so that they can help in these big projects to expose chemtrails. Contact me personally. The way you can contact me about this, if you want to know details about it, you're interested in, it'll help you make some income, and it will help make the organization income at the same time. This is called the Business Model Project, and it's hard to get people to donate to a cause oftentimes, but if you're benefiting and a portion of what you're making benefits the organization, it works much more efficiently. Next item is we need someone to help me with forwarding lab tests from someone in Latvia who has people who want to do rainwater tests. And my hands are full. I need help with someone who's willing to receive those tests and forward them on to a lab or at least make arrangements for them to get to the lab and get back to our person. The person from Latvia is on my back quite a bit because they're ready to roll, and I haven't gotten any volunteers yet. I just need one person, or two people might even help, but one person to help with this so we can get those lab tests done for those people and get them in touch with labs. So please contact me. My email address is on the globalskywatch.com website. Just click contact us, and you can reach me through that email address if you can help. If you have a project you'd like to propose, contact me at the same email address. If you have skills you'd like to donate, we have a growing list of people who are donating their skills so that Michael Murphy, Dane, myself, and other people who have projects going, who need those skills, can call on people to burn DVDs, to type, to write, to coordinate, to do the things that we need to have done. We need to move efficiently and quickly, and so we need people who are willing to help us out. Doesn't need to be great, doesn't need to be super skilled. Just even if you're good with a computer and you're willing to do research or something, please let me know at the same address that you'll find on the Contact Us page at the Global Skywatch website. There, that was quick. We're done with the agenda. Let me take a look at the poll. We do have, I have an indication that we have one person who learned about this in the last year. So that's good. That's good. Thank you for. Okay, what I'd like to do now is introduce Clifford Carnicom. He is the founder, and I hope I have this right, of the Carnicom Institute, has been doing research regarding, you'll have to correct me on this, Clifford, because I'm a little green here, but I believe that you have done research on several subjects surrounding the chemtrail issue. So let me get you in on our conversation, and let's get started here. So give me just a sec. Okay, Clifford, are you on with me?
Yes. Hi, Russ.
Hi, Clifford. All right. We're going to have a question and answer session in a few minutes, but in the meantime, I'd love for you to introduce what you do and what work you're involved in right now at the Institute.
Yes, hi, Russ, and everyone else. Thanks a whole lot for the invitation to be here tonight. I appreciate it. And I'll do my best. I'm here primarily to answer questions, I hope, for folks tonight. But I will give you a brief summary and then see if that helps set a foundation. Russ, my work started as an individual in the beginning of 1999. That's when I became aware of basically transformations that were taking place in our, particularly our atmosphere above directly. And my first photographs were on Valentine's Day in 1999. And I suppose we can imagine I was pretty much a solitary voice at that time. Not entirely, but there certainly was nothing orchestrated in any sense. And having a computer background, you know, we have to realize this is in the infancy, I started a website. And I was motivated to do that out of sheer conscience. I do not have particularly a public profile in my past. I'm a fairly quiet person in my nature. I was a federal employee for a good 15 years. From a moral and ethical standpoint, I was prompted to announce basically to the world that something looks askew here and to call attention to it. And yes, that was a big step for me, but I didn't really have acted that way in my whole life. It's just that was now announcing to the world that something appeared to be taking place that was wrong. And then the expectation as one who sort of believed in the systems that we have founded this country upon, the traditional expectation is that when we announce something that is a grievance or is wrong, that if there is any sufficient merit to that claim, that those claims will be investigated fairly, and those that we elect to represent us will respond to those complaints. And the system is supposed to work. And at this point now, several months into it, my voice is joined with numerous other citizens that are acting in the same vein of calling attention to the situation, calling for investigations, and responsible government. And basically, unfortunately, we learned over the years that system failed. And I hope that that's not our future, but that is the case. During those years. As far as I'm concerned, people did exactly what they were supposed to do, but the system has failed us. And, you know, I suppose in there is certainly an education for all of us in that wherever this goes in the future, those traditional methods, I guess we would call them, of doing things the proper way and staying within certain constraints are going to have to be modified in original and creative ways. And that's not exactly my forte, but I know that there are people that know how to do such things, and these are the types of people that we're going to need to enlist in our future that will know how to orchestrate and organize what essentially is a revolution, and I don't mean that in a material sense, but a revolution in terms of how citizens reestablish and assert their rights and have their rights acted upon versus simply offering their grievances to the public. So that's a little bit of the beginning. You know, I've been in this roughly 15 years now. There's quite a progression of work. The original work was on a website by my name of carnicum.com. And if you go to that site, it will redirect you to the Institute. There's quite an evolution in that work. Starting from the first 2 years, probably spent almost entirely in just photography, of just taking a camera to the sky and documenting as a reporter basically would. That's the process of calling attention to it. The work gets progressively more sophisticated and complex over the years, involving environmental sampling. I have a pretty strong analytical background, so those skills would be applied to my findings and my work. There's quite a bit of work in terms of sort of trying to see the big picture, at least as best as I can. I'm certainly, over the years, certainly not one who thinks that this system is a simple system in terms of what's going on, that it can be explained by a single motive or application. I see numerous cross-disciplines that are involved and numerous cross-agendas that are involved here. And it becomes quite complex and actually very difficult for many of us to handle is what it amounts to. And jumping ahead very quickly because I do want to make myself available for questions. The work progressed in this fashion until in 2008. At the end of 2008, I realized I had gone pretty much as far as I would be able to go as an individual. And so there was a call to create a nonprofit organization, and that's when the Carnicum Institute was founded. It is a small organization. There's no belying that. But we have a very good staff that has accrued over the past several years, and very, very talented people. And basically, I'm trying to extend myself to others because that is the ultimate solution to this. It is a multiplication of leverage by citizens to the point where it simply cannot be denied. And that act of assertion by citizens to basically claim their rights upon this planet will take place. And that's where we're headed. And it looks like you're a part of that process and everybody here. And I thank you very much for that.
Well, I thank you, too, because in November of 2005, when I started seeing scheduled flyovers of Jamestown, New York, where I lived, and these planes crisscrossed the sky for 3 hours, starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, they're spraying a little before that, but they started scheduling it in November 2005, and it was so heavy, my sinuses burned. I could taste the metal in the salt in my mouth. It was salty and metallic. And immediately that day, I started searching the web and immediately found two websites, and yours was one of them. And I saw that you were doing experiments and you exposed this, and immediately I was like, this is what's going on. This is it. I found it. Now, early on, so I want to thank you for being there and putting the information on the web, because you didn't have to do that, but you have a conscience, like you said, and you did it. In the earlier days when you were doing that, I noticed, I think you were doing experiments with barium salts, I remember, and things like that. Do you remember that?
Very well. I actually probably remember most of the words in all of my reports. I would guess it would be probably rare for me that I wouldn't recall something that I wrote. And I could probably talk for a full hour just on that situation, but I very much remember it. And what I could say in summary is that that process of that analysis and deduction actually took several years. This is where I've had to strain my own patience is what it amounts to. But if you look at the actual chronology of that process, reaching the point where I made an assertion that to the best of my ability, with the resources that I have, that this claim is made that this element or compound of it exists in our atmosphere. It took several years to sort of manifest. I remember it very well.
In the beginning, now the things I remember finding on your website were barium salts. So did you found barium in rainwater? Is that correct? And what other things did you find?
Yeah, to the best of my ability. What's interesting on that story of the barium is that you actually have two predecessors to that people just wouldn't know about. And the first would be that there was an individual, his name was Griff. I know him as Griff, A.C. Griffith. Some of us may know him. He passed a few months ago here. He was a government employee in the past that also shared the same conscience that we do. And what's interesting is this individual, I guess in some ways you could call him an insider, but, I have reservations with that term because there was nothing secret about what he was doing. He simply announced a statement, but he said in his research and those that he was in contact with, he had worked with the NSA previously. He was actually the first person that simply made the statement that barium is involved in these operations. And what's interesting is I simply had no context to that statement at all. I registered it. But there was nothing I could do with it. And I suppose the next step is that there is all of these events are usually separated by months, if not a couple of years. But a year or so later, you have an individual did a very smart thing that actually should be the basis of what we're all doing to me on a suit basis. And that is he acquired the HEPA filter, a very fine filter from the aircraft of a commercial airliner. Now, if you want to be smart about how to run a sample test, this is the way to do it as far as I'm concerned. And you want an interesting lawsuit, put in a request to collect all of the air filters of the commercial aircraft flying 35 to 40,000 feet. I think you'll find some obstacles there from what I see, but that's a separate topic and question. But this individual was able to acquire one of these filters and have it tested. This is before really anybody knows anything. And that person sent me a part of that filter, and he sent me the lab test that went with that. And it stuck out immediately on this graph that barium was a very strong presence in that lab test. Now, you have to understand, this preceded really anybody's knowledge of even this topic. It's in my work now that I began the environmental sampling, and it works with HEPA filters. It works with rainwater. You'll see my first papers where I basically start finding a compound. I don't know what it is. I'm just finding a compound that is showing certain chemical and physical properties, and I start analyzing it. And you know, you'll find this paper where there's 18 items listed about what the properties of this particular element or compound would be. And it's through a very painstaking, slow evolution over several years of work before I come around on the tail end, basically, and say, you know, folks, this appears to be a barium compound. And what was happening at that time is that you'll see the work shows a detection of a certain class of element. There's a lot of similarity there. And that is what's called group two of the periodic table has always had my highest interest. And these are the salts of barium, calcium, magnesium, strontium. And there are certain chemical and physical properties, as well as electromagnetic properties of those elements. And that work, you'll see, it started quite early. I have not been able to be involved on the environmental sampling side for really many, many years now because my work has sort of entered into the biological side. If we had the resources and such, I'd love to be able to support and continue that work, but I have to make a choice what I do with my time. But it's very interesting to me how the evolution takes place. And in my case, it's not unusual at all to have sort of a loop or a circle that involves several years in passing. I come to papers 10 years later on what I write with a direct tie to information that might come out in another way.
Now, did you find other substances early on, too, or was barium really the primary thing you found?
Well, no, that group, you'll see tests involving calcium, magnesium, and barium. That's a very interesting group in the periodic table and definite properties. One thing that is interesting, actually, is that I know that the aluminum issue has certainly arisen over the years. There are many people that would attribute that finding to me. If you actually look at my work, I never actually stated any finding. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist by any means. You have to understand how work is being done here. It's being done by seat of the pants, grassroots, with essentially no resources. I was on a jury rigger in many, many ways. I do the best I can. But to get this kind of work done with the type of resources we're talking about already is somewhat ludicrous in terms of how it actually should get work done. But you'll find references to three types of materials. One will be those metallic salts, as I mentioned, but in my case, specifically non-aluminum, which is interesting in its own right. Not saying it's not there, honestly, but I'm just saying it's not attributable to me. Metallic salts, ionizable metallic salts, and that word ionizable is a key word here, which we could spend probably the rest of the evening talking about that because it brings in electromagnetics. But that would be one class. The second class is a certain type of filament, a very unusual type of filament material, airborne filament material. That's another distinctive class. As a matter of fact, over the last 2 hours right before this call, I am again working on that sample material that has never left my interest. It's right at the heart of my work on the biological side. It's a very unusual material, and many of us are certainly familiar with some of the stories and events that precede my reference here tonight. And the third class three would be gel-type material was being reported at that time. When I say reported, it will mean several instances will take place in one way. I would seldom take interest in a single occurrence of an event. And then the fourth class involves sort of a crystal, particularly, and it still interests me on those crystals that were collected through ionizing plates on air filters. That one still interests me. All of those categories really have never, from my standpoint, been adequately investigated. But those are four classes of materials that you'll find spanning over at least a decade in terms of my work.
Okay. You mentioned ionizable metallic salts, filaments, a gel material, and the crystals that were collected on the ionizing plates of filters. Are there any particular one of these classes, do you believe they're more harmful than others, or ones we should be paying more attention to than others?
You know, until the work is done and you know what they are, and I mean really know what they are, I really don't have patience for this generalized type of information at this point. I'm in fairly detailed work now, as best as I can do with the equipment that I've been able to muster up over the years. And, you know, if one does not have the information, how is, I mean, the detailed information and the correct information, and how is one in a position to even judge the toxicity or the effects upon the body, right? I'll certainly make my sort of inferences here with what I do know, but the fact that we don't even know what we're talking about at the level of detail that is required to make those type of evaluations and decisions, so it's the very nature of the problem. Now, on my work, there is, golly sakes, how could I dismiss any of those is what I'm trying to say, right? How could I dismiss any of those? The one that is probably the most innocuous, the most benign in terms of our information about it, and also frequency of that would be the gel. That had a fairly limited window of observation and report. Same also for the crystal. Those are fairly limited events that occurred there. And so the metallic salts and the biological aspect, I guess I would have to give weight to those two. And the biological aspect is this Pandora's box that will bring us to places most people really are not comfortable going. And when you start opening up the prospect of changing or altering or affecting biology in a direct fashion, that really opens the door in terms of potential magnitude of the subject. So it's very hard for me to take that question and put a sort of limit or constraint on what does it really mean until you have the information that the public deserves.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. I totally understand. And I'm sure that you were wishing that you had the resources with your organization to do all this research. But, you know, you said your research migrated, I believe, towards the filaments. Is that correct?
I would say that's true. I think that's true. Partly out of the work I had done with environmental samples, you know, that's a significant body of work that's there for several years until you do have the right equipment. And by right equipment, I mean the right equipment, folks. This stuff costs, you know, anywhere on the low end, you're talking $20,000 to probably $250,000 for the type of equipment we're talking about. And it's simply not even slightly a reality at this point. So how much could I do? How much further can I do? Unless you think I can pay for lab tests, and also if you think I'm going to trust lab tests is another question. I can tell you some events about that. Why? I personally could never take a lab test other than what I regard it as in an audit fashion is the only way I could take a lab test right now because of experiences that I have been through. I wouldn't deny the value of them, but it would be in an audit sense. So the filament category has taken precedence in the work over the last 5 or 6 years because of the impact, the direct observed impact of this particular form within human biology. that's a loaded statement in terms of where it goes, but I had to make a choice. And, you know, at the we're on the receiving end now, folks. I'm sorry, but we're at the receiving end now of what's been going on for 15 years amongst us. And my work shows that the general population is affected and is subject to these 15 years. And I'm trying to do the best I can, and the biological and fulfillment side out of that pursuit is where I am heavily involved, and the organization as a whole.
Okay. I know there's a lot of interest in the filaments, a lot of interest, and there appears to be many people who are suffering related to this subject. Can you tell us what you've learned and what you would like to tell people about what your research has shown so far?
Sure, on that subject. And by the way, you know, we can start tackling this subject at almost any level we want. And most people have a threshold where they really would rather not know too much about it. And I'm okay with whatever level that is. I've been through my own evolution and progression. You know, when I heard the anger reference to and really the despair and sadness referred to earlier in the call, you know, I understand that in terms of the personal evolution and journey that we have to take in dealing with the seriousness and reality of this. And I guess, you know, one thing that I would say that if you don't want to dig into, I guess, what would be called that rabbit hole and that matrix, that's quite complex and sophisticated, it certainly appears. If you don't want to deal with that, that's quite all right, because I would ask each one of us, from a simple and elementary standpoint of pollution alone, if you want to simplify your life and you see something that doesn't look right and you know it's not right and your planet is being polluted, and let's call it that simple, it's just crud in your environment, and you don't want to get involved with all the ramifications of what that crud might have in it and what it means, then take on the issue with all of your fervor and all of your might from just pollution alone, because it is sufficient. You do not need everything else that I have been through to make your case. There are sufficient laws on the books for citizens to assert their rights with respect to the eradication of plain and simple pollution. What do you think the air pollution, I'm sorry if I'm getting off on the tangent for you, Russ, right?
That's fine. It's fine.
But that there are, what do you think that the clean air laws were about? In the 70s, we were in a lot better shape in this country in the 70s than we are now. Smog in L.A. was a mess. You know, I'm 59 now. Smog in L.A. is a mess in the 60s when I'm growing up. We start to clean things up. The air gets better. And go look at the, you know, you want an interesting slide. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'd like to see the later source. I'm down at the bookstore a couple of years ago. I spend a lot of time there, and I pick up this book, which is an almanac on the reporting of the state of the environment across the planet. I don't even think it was a country, right? And so it's an almanac, and this almanac would have been around 2006, something like that. And I look in this book, and an almanac is supposed to be yearly data, correct? You have an update on a yearly basis about the status of something. I look in this almanac for the air pollution data, and the darn data cuts off like in 1998 or 1999. You've got to ask why. You've got to ask why. Why wasn't that data there? This comes across the board if you look at it. There are problems in terms of simply your methods are, if you want to obfuscate the issue, you change the standards. Number one, that's one to watch for. Just watch for a changing of the standards so that whatever you had to compare to before simply doesn't exist, or you simply don't make the data available. And I guess I'm making the case, if we're going to keep it simple tonight and just sort of get started with things, then get off our rear end, and sorry for my soapbox, but get off our rear end and get to work on the pollution aspect alone, because the case is easily made that the clean air laws and the mission of the Environmental Protection Agency are not being satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So make it simple if we need to. And then, you know, we have more time, we'll go in further. But I would, the pollution thing alone, you know, people may not want to know everything. But what do you need to know when you can't see a half mile to 5 miles to 10 miles away to a mountain range in a rural environment where I can promise you and I can show you the models, the physics models that will make the case to you that you need to be able to see 100 to 120 miles?
Yeah.
So what's there? Is it nothing or is it something blocking your view? And if it's something, then what is it?
Yeah. You know, I know what really fires up a lot of people and what got me involved, that got me over the edge, because I'm a very busy person. And, of course, there's other things I'd love to be doing in my life, but I have to do this. I feel I'm very compelled to do this. But I suffer greatly. I smell and taste it. There's a small minority of people, and I've met many of them, who can taste it and smell it. And I have a very bad inflammatory reaction to it. Ended up with a heart attack last year, which was shocking. So I think you're actually talking to an audience that's definitely, right now, they're definitely interested in the details. They're definitely interested. And I know the subject is way too big you can cover in a single phone call. But what I'd love to do is just let you share what you'd like to about your research, what you've learned, and then open it up for questions. So is there anything you'd like to share specifically that you think they might benefit from? And then I'll open it up.
Yeah. Well, I'm probably going to have to jump ahead because that question is so loaded. Yeah, is there anything I'd like to share? Yeah, if I really get going, I'm not a very good soundbite person. Because it's just the way I am. I don't know how to condense things into one sentence very well. It's a great skill to have, and we need those people. It's just not my forte. And, you know, when Russ asked that question, I have 300 papers that are all in my mind at the same time. There's over 1,000 pages of work. It's all in my mind at the same time. And it's very hard for me to take a single one of those writings and somehow give it sort of the exclusive priority. It's the whole picture that I look at in my mind. And so I think I will be better off at least making some stabs in terms of the subject area with questions, because I've tried to give at least a very brief summary. What I can say is that if you're interested in this body of research that exists, that's a part of what the Institute is about, a nonprofit site. And the library of that research is available to you. And if you go to the website, which is under the name of CunninghamInstitute.org, it is .org, you will find a link there on the front that will say something to the effect of research library. And you will find all of the papers that I am referring to presented in chronological fashion from the most current work. To the work back in 1999, and it's a bit overwhelming for some people, and one of our goals over time would be able to get some summaries out of this work to help people be introduced to it, because I know it can be overwhelming. But, you know, the library is there if you want it, and that's, you know, some people can find their way in there. There's also a documentary that's out. It's out in two forms. What you call the long version and the short version, sort of like The Doors Light My Fire, right? The original version was made in 2005. It's an hour and 40 minutes long. It was made with $400 and a 10-year-old computer. So it's not a technical masterpiece in terms of equipment, but I do think it makes a point fairly well and fairly strongly. And The truth is, after 2005, and this is really the case for any of my papers, if I was to know of an error that I had committed or made in my work, I would go back and I would correct that freely. It's not that there can't be something. I'm just saying if I knew of something, I would be doing that. And I do not have that known to me in the research library of 300 papers. And in that documentary of 2005, there is nothing in that documentary that I would retract as being incorrect or misrepresentative. There was a subsequent revision, what I call philanthropic revision, by some folks that did it simply out of the kindness of their hearts. It took them a year and a half. They made a revision and made us a version that's 40 minutes long to make it easier for our soundbite world, and they've done a good job at it. And that one is called Cloud Cover. And I think both of these, if you're willing to put up with the YouTube restrictions of cutting things up into a bunch of chunks, I still wanted to get them out there. I think both of these, to my knowledge, are available on our site, and you could watch at least a rudimentary version of it online. And that 40-minute summary, if somebody wanted a summary of my work, the work, that cloud cover documentary, 40 minutes long, revised probably around 2009, 2010, I would think what might serve as a good introduction to this work. And I guess
okay,
I'll go to questions with you.
Yeah, that's great. If anybody has questions, please press *6 on your phone, and when you're unmuted, you will hear an announcement telling you that you're unmuted, and go ahead and ask your question after that occurs. So go ahead and do that now, and just hang on, and as soon as you're unmuted, ask your question. So I want to just reiterate, people, if you want to see the information, you want to see the 300-some papers that Clifford has produced, CarnicomInstitute.org, and you also have the 40-minute summary called Cloud Cover. I didn't get the name of the longer one. What is that?
Thank you, Russ. The original documentary was called Aerosol Crimes, made in 2005.
Aerosol Crimes, okay. And those should all be available. Now, do you let people redistribute those? Can they post them on their website and help get more coverage, or how does that work?
Yeah, no, they're freely in the public domain. If we have one come from our organization, we ask for a small donation, but that's really basically arbitrary and optional. It's all out there in many, many ways. That first documentary has made itself around the world and even a few languages over the years. So there's certainly no restriction on it of any kind. Basically, hey, what is my job here, folks? It's the same thing as Russ. I have another life and other lives I could live, too. I just went down to Grand Canyon for a week, fortunately. I have other things in my life I can do. But the point is to get the information out because we need to work together. The planet needs help, and there's no way to sort of deny that responsibility that we all share.
Okay, and not only would you love those documentaries to be get all the exposure they can, but people can put links on their website to the CarnicomInstitute.org. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we are a educational and research nonprofit organization. Our goal is to serve the public. Our mission is to serve the public. Everything that we do is driven by serving the public.
Excellent. And one thing that came to mind real quickly before I start taking questions, how can people help? I'd like to mention this at the end as well so everybody gets to hear it. What can people do to help the Institute?
Well, specifically for the Institute nonprofit, listen, if you're serious and you're good, there's a zillion things you can do, and you will find a button on that front end called Volunteer. You can start with that button, and if you have skills and you want to work and not get paid a single cent, sorry to say, we can use all the help we can get. And it's quite a unique group of people that make it in and actually are working at the level that they are. And everyone is invited to join, so that's number one. Number two, on the resource side and money side, you'll also see a button there called donations. which I've just revised, by the way, over the last week or so to let you get some sense, for the first time the public gets some sense of the scale of the problem in terms of need. And I'll give you an example. I was just talking to my wife, Carol, yesterday as I realized it. We've acquired a new instrument about a week ago. This instrument is something that we have needed for years, simply not able to get. And the instrument that we've been able to acquire was made in 1983. It's 30-year-old technology, and it's completely inaccessible to people normally. We've acquired one, and I've spent the last week getting this thing to work. It's called an infrared spectrophotometer is what it is. It's a very important instrument with respect to organic molecule analysis. And after a week or so, I have this thing working. And here's an example of the type of situation and problem we're up against. I have spent over a year of my life making available to you, the public, basically two papers, two most recent papers you'll see. One of them called Amino Acids Verified, and the other one talking about the reduction of iron involved with the biochemistry work. It's taken me roughly a year of my life to produce those two papers for the public. And that's because things have to be done in what you would call innovative and resourceful ways with limited equipment as well as with the powers of deduction and analysis to arrive at certain assessments and conclusions. With this instrument, which is 30 years old and has its problems, but I've got to have it working at least, within 2 days of work, I have been able to reach essentially, I would say, at least two-thirds to 70% of the same conclusions that I have taken me over a year to produce through the alternative methods that I've been having to use for the last 15 years. If you want an example of what technology means and what technology can do, that is an example that is no different than you imagine you being stripped of your computer and you ask, how are you getting your newsletter out to 3,000 people? There is a whole different world that we're talking about in terms of necessity of resources and equipment. And for that plug, should you have an interest or a realization of this need, there is a button called Donate on there where you can see really just a brief introduction to some of those needs.
Excellent. Well, I would definitely encourage people to look over your large – there's a large listing. I'm actually looking at your listing of papers that you have available here and encourage people to consider donating. I know that this research like this is fundamental to drawing conclusions to producing change. You have to have good data so that you can legally get things done. You can convince the world that things are happening. It's just fundamental in my view. It's just, it's like the foundation. You have to have that there. So I hope everyone will help expose CarnicomInstitute.org, link to it, Aerosol Crimes, the movie, Cloud Cover, the 40-minute movie, and consider supporting their work. I'd like to take questions now. So when you hear that your phone is unmuted, please go ahead with your question.
Hi, Clifford.
Greetings.
Well, hi, Clifford. My name is Sharon Caramonte. I'm calling from Ellington, Florida, and I just recently got involved in what's going on because they're spraying 24/7 down here, and I take care of my 94-year-old mother, and she started complaining the past few days, diarrhea, and she feels very tired. So I've told her not to go out. That's one thing. But I'm very concerned because, like I said, they've been working here 24/7, and then suddenly we had this big storm tonight with winds 50 to 60 miles an hour, heavy rains, no rains, and tornadoes. And I know that this is all being stirred up. So I'm very concerned, and I've told Russ, but I'm about to cry over what is being done to us. And I'm about to cry because finally, after my past 2 weeks of my research, I'm able to meet up with people who I can relate to. So I really appreciate that. And one thing, one, I have one question about your, and like you said, some people might be turned off about all the technicalities of your research and everything that's going on. And I'm not turned off by it. It's pretty overwhelming. I'm trying to understand as much as I can as a layperson. But one thing you had was in 2009, the Morgellon statement. So I'd like to know, I'm assuming that that's related to what's going on, and I don't know how many people are showing up with these eruptions and the fact and the other symptoms that may or may not go along with that, like psychological and other types of problems. So could you just talk a little bit about the Morgellon statement?
Sure, Sharon, thank you very much. What I'll do in terms of paving a way, a path for the future and people to go look at this issue, here's what I would do. I would make mention of a presentation I gave in August of this last year. I don't really go around the country too much, and I don't give too many presentations, but I did give a presentation in person in Los Angeles in August, and the organization is run by John White, and the name of the event was called Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails. Those that know me and my work know that I don't particularly use the word chemtrails, but that's neither here nor there right now. That is the name of the organization and website, and you won't have any trouble finding it. I gave a paper and a talk, and the paper behind this had a certain title, and here's the title. The title of this presentation was Geoengineering and Bioengineering, the Unmistakable Link. And what I'm trying to say there is that this presentation was the first occasion where I attempted, to the best of my ability, to make the case explicitly. I've made it in many ways in sort of an illusion source, not illusion, but an illusory source, or a reference, that these things are connected. And those that read my papers will see that correlation made on numerous occasions in a rather gradual, controlled way, which is sort of my style. But this presentation was my calling to make the case that it's not adequate, it's not representative to consider the impact of the issues we're speaking of tonight strictly from the standpoint of what is called geoengineering, that is, alteration or affecting of the Earth systems in some way. That is not sufficient, and that we must, out of necessity, based upon the evidence available to us in mass accumulated over a decade, and I made the point in that statement, I made the point to the audience that I would be able to make my case to you with a single paper of those that I have written. I could pick one paper, and I could make a case to you that there is a direct relationship between the alterations of living systems, including us on this planet, as well as alteration of Earth systems or geosystems. The reality is that I have well over a dozen and a half papers to make that case, and I have made that assertion, and if you want to hear that presentation, I guess I would refer you to those people. I'm trying to see if we can get that presentation available on our site, but I just don't know the answer to that yet. Unfortunately, you'll probably have to pay for that at this point right now. That's your decision if it's worth it or not. But if you want to investigate what Sharon is basically making a reference to here, and that is there any connection between, quote, this topic called Morgellons? Is there any relationship between that and the alteration of the atmosphere and that sampling process that has taken place? My answer to you is unequivocally yes at this point.
Thank you very much, Clifford. Very happy to know you, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Sharon. So John White at the Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails Conference, Geoengineering and Bioengineering, the Unmistakable Link. Do I have that right?
That's right, Russ.
Okay. That's something for someone to check out if they're interested in that subject, and I hope they are. All right. Let's move on to our next question. Okay.
Hello.
Hello, go ahead.
Hi, this is Tammy Rossical. I live in Timmins, Canada. And Dr. Carnicombe, I just want to say thank you so much for all the work you've done. I am a Morgellon sufferer. I have been for 5 years. And for all this time, with all this suffering, not one person has been able to offer me help. In the last 3 weeks, I haven't been able to work because of this disease. And then I started researching, and I found you. And you have just opened my eyes to a whole different set of circumstances that I've been told all this time. So I want to say thank you for trying to save my life and everybody else's. And I just want you to be aware that on my Facebook page, I've actually started a group with other Morgellon people like myself and other information, because I called it Morgellons and much more. With this site and with this information I've gotten from you and your site, I've met other people like me where I thought there was no one else like me. And my spirit has totally reawakened, and I am forever grateful and humbled for all the help that you've opened up for people like me and the people that are going to be coming like me. And that's pretty much what I wanted to say to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Tammy? Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Tammy, thank you very much. Also, for everybody to be aware, I do not make claim to a doctorate, and I appreciate the gesture very much.
No, I actually express that in most of my posts, because I do bring you up often, and I say that you're the one that has actually discovered the relationship, which is making everything all make sense. And I pretty much stress that, and I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you've done, and I hope we can get more awareness. That's pretty much my goal. I know what's caused it now. I'm working on fixing myself now. But I think the biggest part of the whole situation here with everything I've learned in this last week is getting the word out there and having people understand. And I think with my group, that's my main priority and focus, is to have them experience the journey I'm going through with my discovery and getting the answers I need, because I'm waiting for a microscope, and if I can compare what I see with what's online, it's like, oh, my God, everything is validated, and this is actually what it is, and hopefully people like me will stop being ignored and told we're crazy, because as far as I'm concerned, the rest of them are crazy. How can someone let people like us suffer this long for whatever reason? It makes no sense. I'm glad you're trying to make sense of all of this.
Thank you very much, Tammy. You know, it's unfortunate I have to say this, and this is why I finally sort of came out in the open in a stronger way, because I see that the case and point has to be made stronger. I'm
Absolutely.
Not as clear and direct as I need to be sometimes. I realize that, but that's because first of all, I like to be correct and know that I'm right if I'm saying something to the best of my ability.
And also to be
reserved in the sense that we don't want to circulate misinformation.
Absolutely. Hysteria. And yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
The concern at this point, though, is that, you know, Tammy and others at this point, they still are referring to themselves in somewhat of an exclusionary sense that people don't understand yet, that somehow, you know, they're beset with something that, you know, you may not have to worry about. But if you actually take on the information in all seriousness and actually examine what the evidence shows, the evidence is indicating, the phrase I would have to use would be the general population. The diplomatic way of saying this, and if I wasn't diplomatic, I would say it in a different way. The diplomatic way of saying it is that the evidence indicates that the general population is subject the very type of, call it issues, again, I'm being diplomatic, the very type of issues that Tammy is referring to. And I'll leave it that way for now until we're willing to go further.
Absolutely. It's a process. Absolutely. Well, I thank you so much for your time and answering my phone call, and I look forward to hearing the rest of this.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Thank you.
Hello, Clifford. This is Kate.
Oh, Kate, I recognize that name.
I just wanted to say something briefly about the Carnicom Institute, but then I also had a question that I would love you to address. I'm a volunteer at the Carnicom Institute, and I just want to say we need other volunteers and we need donations, but most importantly, I just wanted to say that volunteering is one thing that you can do. It really helps you to feel that you're not so just at the mercy of this terrible program, but that you actually are taking steps to help others and to remedy it in whatever way that you can. And so I just want to put a plug for interest in the Carnicom Institute, because it's been such a wonderful thing in my own life. So just having said that, my question, Clifford, is could you speak, I mean, if it's okay, if you feel comfortable, I would love you to actually, peel off the diplomacy a little bit and let us really say it. I want to invite you to give us the hard truth. If Russ feels that's okay, I would love to hear what you have to say.
Well, thank you, Kate. The issue here that has been slow to sort of work its way into our awareness and consciousness is that if you look at the earliest work that was done, starting in 1999, 2000, if you look at the earliest work, you will find extended examinations, discussions, and speaking of what we'd have to call truth about the nature of a specific type of environmental sample that was reported on many occasions. And this environmental sample form was of a filament nature. Now, if you have airborne filament in your environment, and you can eventually dispense with the diversionary claims of being spider webs, which we can talk about another time if you think it's worth our time, but when you finally accept and realize that they're not spider webs, that asbestos fibers are larger than the type of fiber and filament I'm speaking of, and most of us are familiar with the legitimate concerns that the public has had with respect to the presence of asbestos fibers in their environment, to the point where they have essentially been excluded. But you have a continued presence of a airborne filament sample that no one seems to want to identify, then a problem emerges. And when I say someone, rather than be vague, eventually that burden and culpability falls upon the United States Environmental Protection Service, EPS. And this agency, upon direct request in those early years to simply identify this information, this sample, for the purpose of serving the public interest and welfare. I do not think the claim, and I still do not think the claim, is at all unreasonable. They have a responsibility, if you read their mission statement, to protect the welfare and the environment for the general populace. There was a reasonable obligation on their part to adequately identify this material. They did not. As a matter of fact, they would not even acknowledge the sample. It's all on the record. You can look at all of yourself. The correspondence is there. And from that day, there has always been a problem. It's part of the process of calling for reasonable resolution of a a potential hazard to our environment. And they did not do their job. And it has, I've never left it because it was never okay. You cannot just dismiss it. And then if you read their response a year and a half later, after a Freedom of Information Act is filed by a third party, their response is, we have no obligation. Actually, they don't use the word obligation. What they say, it is not our policy. It is not our policy to identify unsolicited material. Language is fascinating to me because within that statement is just a powerhouse of innuendo and obfuscation that has never been resolved. Because when you have a definitive mission statement, you do not just adopt a policy that suits the person that happens to be in office at this time. That's the first problem. The decision needed to be based on law, not on policy. It was not the decision being made to not identify this material. The second key word in that response was the use of the word unsolicited. When you use that word, what you are saying is we have no responsibility to do anything unless we ask for it.
Okay, Chris, can I just say thank you, but that really wasn't my question.
Okay.
And by the way, everybody, the cloud cover documentary is now an article that you can with pictures that you can find on the Carnicom Institute website. And Clifford, in that article, Clifford has detailed the very exchange that he just spoke about now with the EPA and their lack of taking responsibility to this day. But my question was really about your research, and that is, you know, if you could speak a little bit more, please, about how these filaments and fibers are interacting with the human body. You said that everyone, to a certain extent, has been affected because we're all breathing it. So if you could speak about, you know, again about, if you feel you can go there, what is going on in our bodies with these fibers?
The reason that I feel what I discussed was important and relevant is because if you want to try to jump ahead 10 or 15 years and skip all of the intervening information,
mm-hmm.
it's not exactly fair. But if you want to do that, you will reach the point where you will have to be willing to examine filament materials biological structures, microscopic biological structures on the order of submicron, being the bacterial stage, smallest bacterial stage. You will have to examine and compare the nature and presence of those structures and those type of materials being found in human body samples against the environmental sample that I'm referring you to back in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason that I did mention that in detail, because it is necessary, I believe, to understand that the foundation for what Kate is trying to get an answer to goes back to 1999, 2000. It cannot be dismissed because it has a continuous record of presence and eventual emergence within the biological systems over that 15-year period. And at some point, we will all have to recognize and contend with the reality of that situation, whether it takes decades or hundreds of years, that the general state of the health of the population is being detrimentally affected, negatively affected, by this intrusion upon our lives. So hopefully that wasn't too vague.
Well, it was. I don't need to say it. I'm sure there's more. So thank you. It was vague, but that's okay if you want to leave it there.
Thanks, Kate.
Okay, thank you, Kate. Thank you,
sure.
I appreciate it. All right, let's move on to our next question, Ben. Go ahead.
Yes, hello, Mr. Carnicom. It's Helen Heinle here, and I did watch a presentation. I watched the entire Chemtrails conference in August. I thought it was just wonderful. I do have all of the presentations on download in my computer. So Russ, I don't know. Maybe there's some way I can forward that to you, or I'm computer illiterate, but I have them. So, and that's Mr. Kronkom's presentation as well.
Yeah, if it's okay for us to display that, we can stream any video. So we'll just have to make sure we have permission to do, everything. And I'll be more than happy, and I'll show you how to get it to us, certainly.
Okay, if we can check that out. I wanted to tell Mr. Kronkom that I had an experience where I was exposed to a heavy dose of chemtrails by a low-flying jet that was about a mile from my house last spring. It made me very ill. It damaged a lot of vegetation on my farm. I am also concerned for my horses and some of my other animals that have to be out 24/7, breathing, eating whatever residues are on the grass. The thing that I found interesting was after I was made ill, and of course it was sort of a flu-like symptom type of thing that I had. I had like aching spine and joints. I had burned, scalded sinuses and throat, tightness in my upper chest and back within, I'd say, about 24 to 36 hours of exposure. I experienced these symptoms. I had also the loose stools that some others have spoken of. I noticed my horses having loose stools and exhibiting sort of a depression and just lethargy while all of this heavy spraying. They sprayed us relentlessly from the end of May when I was first sprayed and became acutely aware of it all the way through the summer pretty much. So I had mental confusion, burning eyes. I noticed about, maybe a week to 10 days after the initial problem, I had like a chemical peel almost on my face and my lips, and even my tongue eventually felt burned, and I've had dry mouth. I didn't have the dry mouth immediately, but it seemed like, a couple of months later, I developed a persistent dry mouth that lasted for months. But the thing that I found interesting was I got like a little red bump on my stomach, kind of below my belly button, just like a little tiny pimple, and I was able to pull out with a tweezer a little tiny piece of, it seemed almost like metal. So I saved it because I knew about your research, and I wonder, is there some way that I could send that to you for analysis? Or, I don't really trust anybody else. I don't have any microscope or knowledge or way to analyze this. Is there, would that be something that, I could send to your foundation and have you check that out, see what that is?
Thank you, Helen. I'll answer it this way. Hopefully this is not going to upset people, but I'll say it this way. You can send anything at all that you want to, and the address is Kronkom Institute, P.O. Box 237-21, 23721, Santa Fe, New Mexico, 87505. You can send anything you want. The caveat that I have to provide is that I cannot guarantee anything in terms of what I can or will be able to do, and so I can make no promises whatsoever, but I also don't want to refuse anyone. What I need is for the public to realize, first of all, I'm a working stiff, folks. I go to work every day, and I'm trying to make a living, and we do not have the facilities, resources, or staff to be testing, and also even the equipment, let alone. If you look at my work, if you want to know what jury rigging is about, read my work. We don't have it. Now, we're certainly trying, and things have very, very slowly improved. But there's a world to go. So we're not in position to be providing tests at the level people need. And I guess, one of my strongest calls for all of us tonight is whatever your resources are, whatever your talents are, whatever your energy is, start collecting and directing that energy. And I have to presume that that's exactly what Russ is doing and this group is about. Get your energy together and get this work at the place where it really needs to be. I'll always, and we will always, do the best that we can. But we've had to adopt a position and posture of being an educational and research facility, but not a testing facility. We're not a clinic. We don't have doctors on staff. We, you know, it's just not realistic in terms of what the public can expect. But I would never refuse anything. It's just that I have made this sort of offer to people in the past, and then sometimes I get some very angry emails 2 or 3 months later and say, you know, why didn't you look at my volcanic ash from Siberia, okay? Or why didn't you look at this fungus or what looks like a fungus on this leaf? I'm just being realistic and honest, if people understand that.
Clifford, I wonder what would you say to people who are afraid they may have symptoms of Morgellons? What can they do to be tested?
Well, the best that I can offer, and we are offering, it's really quite an effort, is our organization is conducting a research project. It is where we have put really most of our energy over now getting close to the last year. We have a research project that's very, you know, promptly announced, not promptly, but forward announced on our website called the Morgellons Research Project. And I would encourage you to get involved in that project, number one. The question of, quote, testing, quote, unquote, for Morgellons is one complicated little question, and if we were to talk about that tonight. But if you we could start by saying you might want to become familiar with that research project that's been announced and what the organization is trying to do, and you will see that our primary motivation is to provide honest, factual data collected in a orderly and scientific way involving control group analysis between people that are visibly affected with this condition to those that may not be visibly affected but nevertheless may manifest on an internal level, which is certainly one of my concerns and interests over the years, as well as, quote, a healthy control group. This is the best that we can offer, and it's a very slow process. Talk, you know, when Kate's asking for volunteers, listen, we need volunteers. You should see how much work Kate is doing and everybody else, what they're trying to pull off a project like this, what we're talking about. You know, our competitor is the Centers for Disease Control, which spent $600,000, which is actually a joke, to tell you the truth, in terms of budget, tied the issue up for over 6 years, announced at the beginning of the six-year period what their conclusion was going to be, and 6 years later left the public hanging with a basically ambiguous answer and avoided all the real needs and concerns of any kind of legitimate scientific study. And I saw this headline, you know, right before I got on this call, I saw this news article. I don't have it right in front of my face, but you know the word that was used in that headline? You know, the CDC comes out after 6 years and says such and such is probably delusional. Doesn't cut it, folks. Doesn't cut it from the standpoint of science. Listen, the delusion thing, we can talk about that one all night long. But just the worst use of the word probably in context of a purported analysis is a joke. And that paper, if you ever read the paper, it is a joke from the standpoint of actual, honest science. So
yeah.
We're doing what we can, but understand the limitations of what we're working with, offer to help or to participate, I guess. That's what we can offer as an organization to the public, if that helps.
Thank you. And we've got there's two more calls in the queue. I don't want to keep Clifford too long. He has a life, as we all know, so please just state your name and your question when you when your queue is up. If you do have a question, *6 on your phone. We'll put you in the queue. So let's get to our next caller.
Hi, Clifford. This is David in Florida. Appreciate you taking the time. My question is how do we get this to stop? Or more importantly, how do we get the government to respond to us? We've written petitions. We've had congressional testimonies, which they support. Everybody knows that geoengineering is occurring. They have HAMP, which is the Hurricane Aerosol Microphysics Program. They have ISDAC. So they're not denying that they're spraying. And even if you look at Follow the Money Trail, Evergreen Aviation is getting over $1 billion plus from a contract from Congressman Frank Wolf. It's uncontested. So there's no denying that this is happening. How do we get them to respond to us and get an official explanation? That's my question.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to immediately put that question to everybody, every one of you, to assume responsibility for answering that question. I will be inadequate in terms of what I can offer, but I'll answer it at least at this point right now. I have an obligation as a human being to do what is within my means to make the world a better place. As an individual, I have that obligation. And so I do that to the best of my ability. So much for the standpoint now that it has occupied 15 years of my life, and I have to spend a good part of it managing a nonprofit, right, which is it's a serious issue in terms of my life. So I've done what I can. And I'm one person that has certain particular talents in the background. I'm not the best public speaker in the world. I'm not the best activist in the world. I'm not the best money raiser in the world. But I do some things hopefully reasonably well. And so that's what I do. To start answering this question, I have to extend that to each one of you. You know, remember the old JFK thing, right? You know, I know it's a cliche, but, you know, cliches sometimes have meaning. And the darn thing about, you know, ask not what, you know, your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And skip the patriotic aspect of it. But just ask yourself, what are you going to do? And the first thing I would do is extend the necessity for involvement and using your talents to every one of us. First of all, the second thing that I would say, what somehow eventually will have to be different here is, you know, our world has been transformed now. And as I was referencing early in the discussion tonight, that the normal things don't work. Listen, I filed a petition in 2000 to the EPA with 2,000 people on it. I had to deal with the frustrations of petitions very early in the game for me. I've had to deal with my own, with my own disappointment. I was a federal employee. My father was a Navy man for 30 years. It's very frustrating. I understand that. But it does not eliminate the call for duty, basically, that exists upon each of us. And somehow this world, It will have to transform, and we know that there is this numbers game that goes on with the control of the media. You can have protests now involving a million people on the White House lawn, and the general public will never even hear about it. There was a paper the other day on the prison situation in Iraq and how the ACLU just finally received the information from FOIA. And it's absolutely shocking. It was shocking before, but now the information is coming in over 3 years. And the point of the article that I was reading was, even though he's giving it to you, laying it out to you, what happened, you won't see a single piece on it on the main news, right? We know this is a situation. So this is more a level of consciousness and awareness of planting a seed. But the level that is going to be required is so different in this world than anything that has been imagined in terms of the demand. The demand for the right to a healthful and peaceful existence on this planet is going to have to happen at a level that we're not thinking of right now. because the normal processes are not working. And it has to be at a level that none of us can imagine right now. The Million Man March doesn't cut it. And I wish I could answer simply what it's going to be, but it is going to be a shift in consciousness and awareness that is so forthright and direct that all of the games and manipulations and the business of, you know, three or four companies or six, whatever it's going to be, controlling the media, no longer works. It no longer applies. And we may be talking about something that's going to be decades in our future. I don't know. I don't want it to be decades in our future. But the name of the game is going to have to change in such a huge way that you're no longer playing by the normal rules, whatever that means.
Yeah. Yeah, in my own experience, I've got local government. I've spoken to the head of the Bureau of Air Quality, very interested at first, and then eventually just shut down, very shortly after shut down. Talked to another person who became the head of the Maine Bureau of Air Quality, and they shut down, wouldn't even respond anymore, even though we were both professional. We had a great initial conversation. We do have one more question in the queue. After this question is answered, I don't want to hold Clifford up too much, so I'd like to, after this question, I'd love to open it up and let everyone who's on the call converse if you would like. I will shut off the recording before we enter that state so that you can all just talk among yourselves if you like, but I do want to go ahead and move on to this next question, then I'll wrap it up with a final statement and give my thanks. So here we go.
Hi, Clifford. Thank you for being with us tonight. I'm Laura from Wisconsin. And one of the things when I first visited your website, maybe about a year ago, I remember in one of your videos you said, don't forget the color blue, I think. And you were talking about the blue skies, and I haven't seen a dark blue sky since last October, about 14 months ago. And I just wanted to offer to you that I've been finding out about the geoengineering, the chemtrails, HAARP, the earthquake connection, all of that. And I've been also studying that in a biblical context. And I think the connection is there to the Bible scriptures. And I would like to offer to talk with you about that if you would want to. I know there's things in the scriptures that talk about powder and dust being rained from the sky, the diseases of Egypt being brought back on the people. And I even remember reading, but wasn't able to go back and find references, I think, to even blood coming down in the rain or mixed with the rain. And I think I remember you mentioning, if I'm not mistaken, in August, that there were biological agents. And then, you know, you had said that apparently there were blood cells found.
Yes, and I guess, Laura, I'll also try and make sure if you have a question that you want to try and formulate, to make sure that I address that. If not, I'll do the best I can then.
Mainly it was, I just wanted to offer that if you're interested, I would like to talk with you another time about possible biblical scriptures.
Okay.
To this, and, you know, also the scripture, the truth will set you free, and the truth would set us free if people knew it.
Yes. Laura, thank you very much for your comments. I appreciate it very much. And how would I say this? We all have different contributions that we can all make. And there certainly is, ultimately, a spiritual, call it contest or battle or aspect, to be diplomatic, to this issue, and I'll keep the other words up front in terms of contest and battle, that is to take place and is taking place one way or another. And some of us are more directly involved, I suppose, than others in that type of approach to it. On my side, all I can say is that I value all approaches. And basically, anybody that gives energy and thought to the world, I can appreciate and do appreciate. And I don't know that necessarily I am always completely in tune with all methods, but one of the things I've tried to learn in my life is certainly not to cut myself off from those that are offering value in their own ways to the public or to solve a problem. And so I guess what I would say is, you know, you're free, and I hope that you do make your information available to us and or even the public at large. Also, out of somewhat relevance, there will be a paper that will be coming. I don't know that it will be coming through our site, but I know that it will be coming available to a person that's not directly associated with us, but somebody that at least is in consultation with us. And they have just and are working on a spiritual-based paper, also based on biblical references. And as a nonprofit, we do, just out of basically legalities, we have certain restrictions in terms of how we operate. We're an educational research organization. We operate as a public charity. And I'm not trying to say we can or not be will not be involved, but it certainly will have to be, I guess, evaluated in terms of how deeply the institute gets involved in any kind of direct particular sect or religion. And I'm not trying to separate from here. I'm just being realistic in terms of what we have charter guidelines to work with. But I guess, in Laura, my first thing to do is to thank you for making available what you are. Please continue on that process, and you may find some of our staff actually more helpful than I'm able to be. And then the second thing would, by all means, please make your information available also in whatever form that you'd like it to be. And if nothing else, that becomes available on a broader basis if you'd like it. I don't know if that was helpful, but that's how I tried to address it.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much. And I want to thank you, Clifford, for making the time to be here. I know you're very busy. You do have a life. Yeah, you did mention earlier the Morgellons Research Project that is available on your website. I'd like to give you the floor to say any closing statements you'd love to make right now, and then I will open up the conversation so everyone can chat among themselves. And because I realize that when people get together, good things happen. It's always been that experience with me that people start making alliances and working together, and that's so important. So go ahead and please, anything you'd like to say to finish off our conversation?
Yeah, thank you, Russ. Mostly, I just wanted to thank you for pulling this together. I hope that what I've offered you tonight has been helpful. If nothing else, I hope that the comments I've made have, you know, sort of at least given you a certain direction that you might want to go to look at things and to carry on. The greatest value, you know, that I see here is, in line with what I was saying before, this is a collection of energy that's here. And if you want to know something that I have been speaking from the very beginning, it's exactly what I wanted. It's the thing that I wanted the most from the very beginning was the dedication of our energy as human beings towards the awareness to start with, the understanding, and the eventual improvement and resolution of, call it, certain problems that we are faced with. It's what I wanted the most all of these years. You can get a scientific answer to something, but that doesn't mean anything unless you make the world a better place. And that's the end goal. And so it as frustrating and disappointing as it might sound sometimes, this is the bigger picture that is there that I'm looking at. I'm looking years ahead. I'm looking beyond when I'm here. That it is this energy of people, as Russ is saying, coming together that is the most important thing of all. And this little pocket, whether it represents a dozen people or our little organization of a dozen or two dozen people or 100 or 1,000, they all represent a seed. Every one of them does. And, you know, if you want to understand something that has the greatest sense of meaning and value to me now over the 15 years, it is the acknowledgement and the recognition that this energy does indeed need to be collected in an organized fashion to make this world a better place. And for that, I thank you for what has started here, whatever, however small it is, and I hope that I serve at least as some catalyst for you to understand the reality and seriousness of the issues that we are living with in these times, and to think about those that inherit the world after and beyond us as to what our responsibility of stewardship is, what I would call it, for this planet and those futures. And I hope you will continue to be a part of that process as you have shown yourself to be here tonight.
Well, Clifford, thank you so much for all the time that you put in, and thank you for everything you've done. And before everybody thinks this is over and there is nothing interesting left,
Q&A session is over.
I would like to invite you, if you appreciate the work that Clifford has done, as soon as your mic is unmuted, please say thank you.
Unmuted.
For all of your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for making me feel like I am not crazy and this is really happening.
The website is
muted.
All right. Thank you, Clifford, very much. Thank you for all that you've done and all of your work, and hopefully we can speak to you again in the future and know that we recognize the value of what you're doing, and we know that the fruit that is coming from it is going to be well worth it and continue to be well worth it. Everyone, I'm going to turn the recording off. Thank you, Clifford, so much for being here. I know you all appreciate his time and his work so much.
Your conference recording